And it's another stellar edition of the 920 podcast. We have Chuck back with us. We're pretty much at full go. Chuck's a traveling man, as most of you guys know. He's up in Lexington right now, but he's dialed in. We're going to talk some ball, talk some Tennessee baseball, SEC conference tournament. Lots to talk about, really. I mean, this week we're coming to you late in the week. We really didn't know when to get this thing together because we didn't know how the conference tournament was going to shake out. The weather has played its role, but it looks like we're over the hump on that. Charlie, let's dig into it. What are your thoughts so far early on in the tournament and your thoughts on Tennessee?
Well, at this point, just glad that the SEC tournament's getting played. Felt pretty hopeless for a couple days, but Tennessee, I thought it was, they tweeted yesterday, don't need to get ready when you stay ready. I thought that was kind of funny. But, hey, they were a team that didn't seem to be bothered at all by the constantly changing schedules and the uncertainty of when they would actually get to play. As, I mean, again, right from that first inning, Tidwell works around the walk, and then the balls get on the board. I mean, Tennessee kind of closed the year with that same edge that they started the season with. I know that we all kind of recognize that there was a lull in the middle, and lull is relative too, because it was a lull relative to how absurd this team had been. But since that Belmont midweek game, really, or even going back to the Georgia series, this team's kind of played with its edge again. This team has looked like they're at their best again. It's a team that is showing up to a ballpark to kick some ass and to let you know that they are kicking your ass. And carried it on against Vanderbilt. Always fun to go 4-0 in a season against Vanderbilt. And I would be surprised, just based on the last couple weeks and last night's performance, if this team doesn't win an SEC tournament championship.
Yeah, I thought it was real nice to see that offense not really lose a step. And if you think about it, they were on normal routine. They've been on that Thursday through Saturday slate for the past few weeks. So it would be just like not having a midweek game. So I didn't feel like the weather or any delays was going to play a huge part. I know that obviously there were question marks and they had to probably adjust in terms of things they were doing to prepare and practice, things of that nature, but it looked like an offense to me that was just licking its chops to just bust through this tournament. Vanderbilt, they threw Devin Futrell, and man, he had short work. It was an early exit for him, 47 pitches. Jorel Ortega had a 12-pitch at-bat, second at-bat of the game, and that, I felt like, really worked Futrell and really threw him off balance, because what's coming at you. You're dealing with the best lineup in America, and then you have an at-bat like that to begin the game. I felt like that was crucial, and Tennessee never really looked back. I mean, Joe and Drew Gilbert got things going early, and then some others capped it off. You had Luke going oppo, and Cortland Lawson with a blast there towards the end of the game. Blade looked good. He did, he had a couple of bad calls go his way, or go against him, I should say.
Oh, man.
But,
bad is an understatement.
Yeah. So I thought it was, that was typical Blade, I thought. Like, he's able to, in the past he gets runners on. Things are, going a little off kilter, and, he's able to reel it in. And, I thought it was a good performance by him. I was surprised to see the Vols go. They used Camden, Ben Joyce. They used Kirby first, so that wasn't really a surprise there. But you ended things with Ben Joyce. He looked great throwing strikes. It'll be interesting to see what they do going forward with the pin, but tonight, going against the LSU Tigers in the nightcap, it will be Chase Dolander. And I really like how this laid out. You know, we were thinking perhaps Chase would get the nod to begin things off, you know, before all this weather and the scheduling changed. But I think ultimately it worked out for Tennessee, going with Blade to begin with. And now you get Chase going against probably the hottest offense in the conference right now. LSU's averaging 14.5 runs their last five games. So you want your guy. You want your number one guy going up against that. And it's not do or die. So I think it worked out well for them. And I'm anxious to see what Dolander has in store. You know, Tennessee's got a great staff and a lot of great starters. But Chase Dolander, you know, I don't want to use the words that it's not close or something like that, but there's a gap. In my mind, there is a gap between he and the other guys in terms of starters. And I think that he's going to have a couple of moments in the postseason, whether it be Hoover, Omaha, regionals, super regionals. I think it's going to happen multiple times. And I think come season's end, when all these tournaments are wrapped up, I think we're going to be talking about Chase Dolander being the best starter in America.
You know, Logan, that's really not far-fetched to say. I mean, like you said, we've been beating his drum since the beginning. I mean, even when he did have that one singular rough outing against Baylor, I mean, even before that weekend, we were saying, hey, Chase Dolander, that's the guy. You know, he's the guy with, in my opinion, the smoothest delivery, the most repeatable delivery that projects to the next level the best, with just the smoothest stuff, the best demeanor, and he just is the guy. He's the guy that I trust most. I wouldn't say that there is a sizable gap between him and Tidwell. I'm still very much on the Tidwell train. I want Tidwell to be one of your first three starters in the postseason. Like, that's where I'm at with Blade Tidwell. I trust him more than I trust Burns or Beam. I don't know if we'll see Tidwell be one of those three guys, but that's what I would prefer. But yeah, like you said, I mean, Chase Dolander with a good postseason, which I think he will have, does have a chance to cement himself as the best starter. It's kind of like this baseball team. You know, this baseball team we've talked all year long about, hey, this is maybe the best team of all time, and this is an otherworldly team, and whatever else, and you know, all that will either be decided or left up for interpretation based on what happens in the postseason. You know, if this team goes to Omaha and wins the College World Series, I think people will feel comfortable saying, hey, this very well might be the best baseball team that's ever, you know, ever graced college baseball. But, you know, if they don't, there will be some questions. The same with Chase Dolander. You know, if he has a big postseason and he delivers for you, if he's that guy that you can trust, then I don't think it leaves a lot of doubt that he is one of the best, if not the best, pitchers in the country.
Yeah, and you got to wonder if he'll have one of those moments tonight, because I think that's what he's lacking, not that I hold it against him. It's just that they're in the thick of the season of conference play. You know, he had to sit out because he took that line drive, and so his stats aren't – they're really good, but for people from the outside that don't really follow the SEC – or follow the Vols, you know, may run down the stats and just say, oh, well, he needs a little more sample size or this or that, whatever. But I just feel like this is an opportunity for him when all eyes are probably going to be on this game tonight. And then going forward, all eyes are going to be on Tennessee to see what kind of run they'll make. I think that's really when things are going to be put on the national stage, because we've talked about it before. In terms of, you know, the statistics, you know, college baseball doesn't have Baseball Savant or anything like that, StatCast. There's TrackMan involved, but that getting to that information is few and far between. I would love to see, you know, the StatCast, the TrackMan type numbers for Chase. We've taken a peek at those early in the year, and, you know, he had the best stuff plus and really good command. And I just seeing it with my eyes, like I've watched a lot of college ball this year. And, you know, it's one thing to have a really good pitch that people can't hit. We see it all the time in the majors. Guys have nasty stuff, but they struggle with command. I feel like Chase, it's about leveling up and getting that stuff category and having good command, not even great command. But I think, like you touched on, his smooth delivery and his mechanics, and watching him pitch with the slider and the fastball combo that he has. And by the way, he has a good changeup. I really feel like his stuff, from a mechanical standpoint, technical standpoint, I think meets really good command. And I just think that he's, in my opinion, he's the best starter that I've seen this year. I don't watch a lot of West Coast ball, but I have seen Connor Jerpy from Oregon State. I think he's more of a stuff plus guy that struggles with command from time to time. But I think Dolander needs those moments, and I think he's going to get them. And I think it starts tonight. It's this LSU offense is rolling right now. It's a prime opportunity for Dolander to put out that fire, and I think they will. And because look, LSU's not an offense. They don't steal bases. Like if they did, they would be dangerous. But they're they don't steal bases. They're much like it's all about home runs and doubles for them. You know, so. It'll be interesting. Charlie, thoughts on, real quick, did you have any thoughts on the LSU matchup tonight?
I mean, they're probably the last team in this tournament that I wanted to play. Either they or maybe A&M, but probably LSU because, like you mentioned, the hottest offense in the SEC. Now, at the same time, that hot offense has gotten hot off of the likes of Vanderbilt and Kentucky, Kentucky can pitch. Vanderbilt is obviously struggling right now, but in terms of just this matchup, it's a great opportunity, I think, to get a high-stakes postseason big moment, like big offense that you're going against steel for Dolander. Like you said, I mean, it's an opportunity for him to have one of those staple performances. You know, I think it's an opportunity for Chase Dolander to just feel what it's like to play against a good offense in a game where they're going to need you to go out and be really good. You know, you can't not be really good against this LSU team right now and win a game. So, pretty just excited to watch it happen, really.
And you have to wonder, you know, you mentioned Tidwell being a question mark as far as like the regional rotation. I'm wondering,
I want him in there so bad.
I'm wondering if what we're seeing is an indication of next week going Tidwell first and then Dolander, because a lot of teams, I mean, it's pretty clear Dolander's the ace right now in this staff. A lot of programs like to use their number one guy second in regional tournament time. So, and I kind of like that. Just because what we're seeing this week, you know, you got Tidwell out there who, you know, he's amazing. Like you said, there's not much of a gap between him and Dolander. And Tidwell right now, in terms of his trajectory on the season and his workload, it's equivalent to being he's reaching the middle part of his season, you know what I mean, because he jumped into this season so long because he was on ice to begin with. So he's going into peak form, and so I really, really like Roland Tidwell out there first. And then backing him up with Dolander in the number two spot, Then you got Beeman Burns, however you want to play that. So I wonder if that's not an indication of what we see next week for the regional. But if, as far as this matchup tonight, we know Dolander's going for the Vols. LSU is a question mark right now, but I think it's going to be Ty Floyd. He's 5-3 on the year, 3.12 ERA. He has 8 starts on the year, but he's not been a full-time starter. That's the problem with LSU. They have a true ace in Mikel Hilliard. After that, they don't have another starter penciled in, like, anywhere. They wanted that number two guy to be Blake Money. He has struggled, ERA over 5, giving up home runs right and left, 14 on the year. He lost his starter role a few weeks ago. What they've done the past couple of weeks has gone with, they've gone with like a staff day over the weekends. But Ty Floyd did start last weekend against Vanderbilt, and it wasn't a staff day. They gave him a role. It said, here you go, go get him. And he had a really good start. He's actually had, in his last 17 2/3 innings pitched, he's only given up 3 earned runs, 19 strikeouts to just 3 walks. He does have 8 home runs on the year, and he's a fly ball pitcher. He has 66 flyouts to just 16 outs via the ground ball. So even though he's pitched well of late, he's not been a full-time starter, and he's a fly ball pitcher with the propensity to give up the long ball going up against this Tennessee lineup. I think this game is won at the back end. We talked about it off air, Charlie. LSU had, for some crazy reason, used Fontenot last night when they were up 9-2, I think it was. Fontenot is an SEC staple. He's like the version of Redmond Walsh, you know, is for Tennessee. It would be like Tennessee rolling Redmond Walsh out there, a 7-run game, when he doesn't need a workload. You know, it's just, that did not make sense to me. Things got dicey at the end, and they had to bring out their closer, Riley Cooper. So that's interesting to me. But LSU does, that's their strength in terms of pitching, is their relief. They have Fontenot, they have Cooper, they have Eric Rizelman, who has, if this guy gets in, watch out. He, speaking of that stuff plus, he's up there. He's got some nasty stuff. They've got 3 of the top 6 relievers in terms of ERA in the SEC. So they've got a decent bullpen, but they had an interesting workload last night, and I wonder how much that plays into it. I think Dolander, he may give up 2 or 3, you know, maybe something we're not used to seeing of late from him. But, you know, I think Dolander deals against this hot offense. I think he puts out the fire. And I think I think the Vols run away at the back end of this game.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where the advantage is. And I think that Dolander will give you the opportunity to be in a position to run away at the end of this game. And obviously, if you get through this one, it puts you in a really good position moving forward. And, you know, it doesn't take some genius to point that out. But, you know, you win this game tonight, and it puts you playing in the late game tomorrow night.
Right.
Against either right. Vanderbilt, Kentucky, or the same LSU team again. Obviously, you know, with Vanderbilt or Kentucky, you feel pretty good about facing either of those teams, especially given, you know, the arms that they've had to go through, the extra games that they would have had to play. And then, you know, if you beat this LSU team and have to see them again tomorrow night, well, they're going to have to play one more game than you in between. So you'd have the advantage there, not to mention that you're already probably the deepest pitching staff in the country. So tonight is the game for me that, you know, I think winning the SEC tournament kind of hinges on. And you have your best starter on the mound to get you there. Because I think, you know, you win tonight –
Yeah.
Vanderbilt and Kentucky are playing, but you still got a hot A&M team and a hot Alabama team and a Florida team. It's all right. But if you can get past the Knights again, you should be able to win the tournament. Now, going back to this real quick, I know you kind of agreed with me. It's something I've been trying to, I've been arguing for a while. I think that it should be Tidwell going to open up the region. It looks like you're probably going to be playing either the winner of the SWAC or the winner of the MEAC. Maybe like an Alabama State or like a Coppin State.
Yeah.
A baseball team that, Xander Seacrest could shut out.
Yeah.
Which, that's not a knock on Xander Seacrest. Also a good pitcher, but I mean, it's not a very good baseball team that you're going to play on Thursday. I mean, on Friday. So, I think you should go Tidwell there and then have your best arm for what's the most important game of the region, that second game. And then from there have Beam and Burns. But you agree that they should go Tidwell though later too, obviously. Do you think that it should be Beam or Burns, though, getting that third start?
Man, I can't make up my mind between those two. I like Burns coming out of the pen. Just because of the swing and miss that he's able to draw. I know he's been hit around more so of late than, the big portion of the year. Beam's a guy that's going to work and attack the strike zone more. I think it just depends on matchup, seeing who we got, what's laid out in the region, and I think that would probably dictate which one you go with based on how those pitchers attack. Yeah, I that's a tough one for me, not knowing the opponents.
Yeah, I guess that is fair, not knowing the opponent. Are there any like two seeds that make you pretty nervous, like looking ahead to next week, kind of just bracketology wise?
If Texas Tech ended up as a number two seed, I saw there's been so many projections, and I don't look at them enough.
I look at them every day. The ones that have been consistently showing up have been Wake Forest as your two.
It doesn't bother me. Either. Yeah, I mean, look, first of all, I'm not scared of, in terms of Tennessee and their chances, like I'm not scared of anybody, but things do exist. Like we saw last year, Wright State was they were a two seed as a four seed. Like bad seeding exists, and it's okay to be upset with rankings or seedings and how things lay out. But that doesn't mean that if you're upset with it, that you're scared or something like that. But yeah, I feel better about, if it was a weight matchup, I would be real worried at the beginning of the season. Wake certainly has the offense, but I just don't think they have what it takes in terms of their pitching staff as a whole to wreck that regional here in Knoxville. Texas Tech is a team that I've seen them the few projections that I have looked at. This was a couple of weeks ago, I think. I saw Texas Tech. I know they're right on the verge of being a full-time host, the top eight seed. Not really anybody else outside of that I would be worried about. I'm sitting here looking at the top 25. There's nobody really other than Wake Forest or Texas Tech. If Texas Tech slid down that far. What's your thoughts? Are there anybody that... Yeah, look, I'll say this. I don't think they would be a... Would Wofford be a two or a three? They would be a three, right?
Yeah, I've seen... Oh, my... The other day, it was Wake Forest and Wofford, I saw.
Yeah, see, I'll do without Wofford. Like I said, I'm not worried, but, I would just not rather deal with that. You know what I mean?
That's how I would put it as well. Like, people get upset. Well, we're the best in the country. What do you mean
Okay, yeah.
I've seen that number three be Liberty quite a bit, too.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm not worried. I was more worried about Liberty last year than this year's Liberty squad. It's a team that, you know, it's almost like copy and paste year after year with that program. But feel like they had just a little better top-end pitching last year. So not worried about that. But, yeah, Wake Forest and Wofford, that's an interesting 2-3. You know, a Wake Forest team that has one of the best offenses in America, and then a Wofford team that, you know, tops in the all of the nation in stolen base category. So, yeah, that would be interesting. Yeah, I'm not seeing any other matchups that would worry me. I mean, that 2-3 combo right there might be like the worst possible scenario for UT. Not that it, like you said, not that it means they're at risk, but that's in my mind, that's probably the toughest 2-3 seed that you could draw.
So right now, your projected 2 seeds, all 16 of them: Wake Forest, Georgia, Vanderbilt, Texas Tech, Coastal Carolina, UC Santa Barbara, Gonzaga, Texas State, Virginia, North Carolina, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Florida, Oklahoma State, Oregon, and Georgia Tech. I would prefer not to deal with Virginia. I would prefer not to deal with Texas Tech.
Yeah.
If you know, if there are any two that I want to avoid, it would be those two specifically. And Oklahoma State, you know, I wouldn't love to see.
Yeah, Oklahoma State's a weird one. They do have a combination of good pitching and a really good offense. It's just a matter of consistency with them. Just when they were on the rise a couple of weeks ago and people were thinking, hey, this team could win the Big 12, they could be, you know, top 8 seed, that's when they got swept by Texas Tech. And Texas Tech, yeah, that does, like I mentioned and you mentioned, would rather not see them at all. I'm wondering how they've still got Texas projected as a number two in the College Station region. Oh my goodness. But
so the latest one from D1 Baseball today has Texas jumping back into host territory.
That's what I was wondering, because it's looking like they're going to lock that up.
Yeah, with what Texas has done combined with like Louisville going 0-2 in the ACC tournament, like that's bumped some teams up. You know, obviously like Virginia not playing well lately has bumped some teams up. LSU has entered the top 16 now. Virginia, like North Carolina, Texas State, Gonzaga, Dallas Baptist, like those are some other teams potentially right there on the line.
And also, that Knoxville region would be, as it's projected, would be matched up with the Statesboro region, right?
The current one would be the Statesboro region with Georgia Southern, Campbell, Georgia, and UCLA.
Yeah, see, that. That's another interesting one right there, because you know, potential matchup against Georgia Southern again. You've seen those guys before. Campbell, that would be a really interesting matchup. They've got some really good pitching down there. I would not be worried if, like, not worried about UCLA if Georgia snuck in there. Not worried about them, obviously. Georgia Tech got the offense, but nothing else they're working with that could pose a threat. I don't think they're a potential landing spot for that region. But no, to go back to your original question, like, I would say that probably Texas Tech worries me the most out of all those realistic options.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Texas Tech and again Virginia. I just don't want to see Virginia.
Yeah, Virginia. What can they do? Do they have to win the ACC to lock up a host?
I mean, I think they're right there. So you know, they are honestly, I could see them because of that alone, because of how close they are to being a top 16 team, I don't think you see them in a regional anyway. You know, I don't think they'd give that to the number one team. But
no,
they lost to Notre Dame today.
Oh.
So I don't know if that eliminates them. I don't know if that eliminates them from the ACC tournament, or if that sent them in the loser's bracket. Honestly, I'm not sure what that bracket's at, but I guess maybe that's probably enough to keep them out of hosting after all.
Yeah, no, if they end up a number two seed, I do not want to see them.
I don't want to see Geloff in Lindsey Nelson.
It'd be a chance at revenge, you know, from last year in Omaha. I'm always down for that. As far as the SEC goes, we've got, so Florida bounced Arkansas early this morning. I was a little bit surprised how decisive that game was. I mean, Florida kind of ran away from there. Connor Nolan was on the bump for the Hogs after this game. He's thinking tossing a pigskin around sounds a lot better than throwing a baseball. I can guarantee you that. UK and Kentucky and Vandy going on right now. Let's see if I got a score. I got a peek at it here. Wow, Kentucky up 1-0.
Let's go.
They've got two runners on, two out. And Arajanu is on the bases, so he played some part in this this thing they've got going on, trying to score some runs against the Commodores. Yeah, that'll be interesting to see if Vandy gets beat by Kentucky, gets put up by Kentucky here. Gosh, man, you got to think Dave Van Horn and Tim Corbin, they're trembling right now, right?
I mean,
they're not just about to lose their season. They're about to lose grip of the SEC. They're not used to this. Tony Vitella's come in and rattled the bushes.
That was one of the things that that was my main discussion point coming out of the Vandy-Tennessee series initially, is that this series could be the turning point for Vanderbilt baseball in all the wrong ways. Like, this season could.
Yeah.
You know, with them kind of not reloading as well as they normally do, with Tennessee slowly starting to take mid-state recruits away from them, with Tennessee, you know, now becoming the state or the team in the state that people look to, that the kids look to, that the kids want to wear the Tennessee jerseys, and the kids want to go to the Tennessee baseball camp, and the kids want to, you know, pretend that they're Ben Joyce and Trey Lipscomb and Blake Burke and you know, Drew Gilbert, and instead of what once was, you know, pretending like you're Tony Kemp or Dansby Swanson and wanting to go to the Vandy baseball camp and wanting to be a Vandy boy and everything else. I mean, it shifted in the state of Tennessee, and you can feel it. You know,
yeah.
When I'm in Nashville, even, I can feel it. And if Vanderbilt continues to, you know, collapse down the stretch of this season, it only further accelerates the process in which that's happening. And for Vanderbilt, with Tennessee, you know, becoming the program they are, that might be it. Like, they might. I mean, I'm not going to say that it is it, because it's Tim Corbin and still Vanderbilt, but, you know, they might not ever regain the year-to-year dominance that they once held.
No, I think you're right. And, you know, most of the argument I hear is, you know, hey, this has got to play out. And of course it does. But Tony Vitello has turned around this thing so fast. And you mentioned it, the flip that he's made on the recruiting trail. Man, I think it's huge. There's been a huge impact there. And not only that, you got to think about the NIL stuff. It's going to level out some of the 11.7 rules and the advantage that Vandy had there. But yeah, if certainly it does have to play out, but
Vanderbilt can't just have an entire roster on scholarship anymore.
And also, you know, it's...
they can, but other teams can match that. My bad, yeah.
Right, like the endowment loophole can be leveled by... we're extremely biased, but I would be hard-pressed to find another college baseball program where the marketing has skyrocketed for these guys. Like, you've got Evan Russell with Weigels. You could probably name off a dozen guys who have shirts made of them with caricatures on them. Kirby,
the entire team, pretty much. Yeah, there is no baseball team in the country that has sold more and seen their sales increase more than Tennessee.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. And, that plays a part. And there's just so many factors here going for Tennessee and the trajectory of the program. Yeah, I would be willing to bet my money's on Vitello. Like, I think, you know, everyone I've talked to, heard from, you know, it's everything from the analyst on TV, people I've spoken with, whether it's a former D1 player, riders, coaches, they all have the same sentiment. And they all say, this dude's different, and he's going to be a generational coach. So I'm going to go with that, and that's what it looks like to me. So what do you think about Bama and A&M? I think that's the game of the day, in my opinion, in the SEC.
I think Tennessee LSU is the game of the day, maybe, but Alabama A&M also has a very good argument for it. I mean, either of those two games are some of the best games in college baseball as a whole today. Alabama, if you ask D1 baseball or if you ask Baseball America, has done the same thing that they did last year and played their way into the last four in the SEC tournament. So you're looking at a really hot Bama team. You're also looking at a really hot A&M team. I'll be honest, I don't know what the pitching matchups are for that game. I haven't looked at it.
It's probably – that's. I was just trying to look that up. It should be Grayson Hitt for Alabama and Nathan Detmer for A&M.
Give me A&M in a close one.
Yeah, they're heavy.
Give me A&M in a close one, and give me Tennessee and A&M in the SEC championship game Sunday.
Well,
like in basketball.
What I'm wondering is, how is A&M on Tennessee's side of the bracket right now? Did I see that correctly?
Don't worry too much about the size of the bracket, just in terms of what it looks like on paper, because that's more about, time-wise. A&M is not, really on Tennessee's side of the bracket. They're just on Tennessee's side of the bracket in terms of...
Oh, I see that now. I see that now, because they're
playing games.
Yeah, Bama is game 11 against A&M, and they jump up, the winner jumps up to this other...
Yeah.
Okay, I gotcha.
When you're looking at the latest bracket, that SEC put out, the top is just the loser's bracket, and the bottom is the winner's bracket. But yeah, A&M, if they win today, will play in the semifinals against whoever comes out of Alabama or Florida. And, Tennessee again would play either Vanderbilt, Kentucky, or LSU if they win. But yeah, I think just like basketball, you're going to get the same thing here for baseball, where A&M and Tennessee, the teams that everyone expected, meet each other in the SEC Finals.
Right. No, I think that's the way it's shaken out. I do think Bama – look, A&M's a heavy favorite. Well, not a heavy favorite, but I've seen minus 45 or so favorite. So if you think it's a coin flip, probably go with Bama. I'm not betting the sides here. I think it's man, I don't know what to make of this game. Nathan Detmer was great all year. Past few outings, most recent outings, hasn't been so spectacular. I don't think he's made it to five innings the past three or four starts, so that's interesting. Grayson Hitt, He's Bama's Sunday guy, their third guy in the rotation. No pun intended, but he gets hit around some. I would take the over. I love the over if it's 10.5. We're not seeing totals at your typical online sports books here in Tennessee that we all play and partake in. Because, Charlie, this didn't dawn on me till a couple of days ago. I was wondering, why are we not seeing totals? It's because of the run rule. The run rule effect that's, which, I don't know, I think you should still post totals. But
I didn't think about that either. You just answered all my questions.
But they are viable at other books. I'm seeing some, and it's tough for me not to play them because in that account, I've progressed it to a certain amount where I want to make a withdrawal, and I don't want to touch it because it's a pain in the ass to get that money. You got to pay a fee. It's out of state, all that stuff. But yeah, if you see a 10.5, you have opportunity. That's my play of the day, is over 10.5 in Bama and A&M. I'm also on Vandy and Tennessee moneyline parlay. We'll see how that shakes out. Maybe we can wrap this up, Chuck, by the way, guys, Chuck, like I said, is in Lexington. Why is he in Lexington? I don't know if he's going bourbon tasting or not. I'm sure he will. But first thing on the agenda, tell him where you're at, Chuck. You're watching some baseball.
Yeah, I've been recording this podcast from the parking lot of, what is the stadium even called? From
the former home of the Legends, right?
Yeah, from Wild Health Field in Lexington, the home of the Lexington Legends. That's where the OVC tournament is taking place. So yeah, I came up to watch a little mid-major baseball, watch Belmont in the semifinals today, hopefully in the championship tomorrow. And yeah, I probably will taste some bourbon tonight, maybe a couple bourbons tonight, but it'll all just be Jim Beam. Oh, no, I just realized, though, I'm in Kentucky and I can't place any of these bets. Oh, that's a tough one.
Oh, man, that sucks.
That's a tough one, Logan. Oh, no.
That's how I feel when I go to Georgia. I don't know. I know Georgia's changed some laws, but I know last year and the year before, I would always forget when I crossed that state line. I know that they have – I know you can do, like, Jock Market and Prize Picks in Georgia now. I don't know about the other stuff. But, yeah, man, that's tough.
Yeah, did not think that through. Should have thought about that before I crossed the state line. But, hey, I'll be back tomorrow night. You know, the only good thing that ever come out of Kentucky is I-75 South. So.
You're going to have to find one of the 17 people in the stands to go shake down and give them a shiesty bet.
I would actually love to just find Tennessee Tech fan in the crowd and just bet with them on
the Belmont Tennessee
Tech game.
Hey, there's a chance. I know that hardly anyone is there, but if there are 25 people there, there's a chance you're going to find somebody that's going to want some action. I mean, you're either there because you're family or you're looking to get your palms sweaty.
No, yeah, pretty much. I would be surprised if I run into a non-family. I would be surprised if there's anyone here that is not family, a close friend, or a degenerate gambler. So, should be a good time.
Well, I hope you have a great time, Charlie. We'll put this thing together. I don't know when. Probably after the tournament wraps up. But, yeah, we'll ramp up our action here with the 920 podcast. By the way, be sure to download the Fan Run app. We're on SoundCloud. We post this on Twitter. Get at us. Feel free to hit us up on Twitter. chop it up with us. We love, love, love college baseball. It's at peak season right now. We've got the conference tournaments about to go into regional play. Man, I'm excited. I'm pumped up, Chuck. You be sure to have a good time up in Lexington. Try to sneak me some good bourbon down here on your way back.
Sounds good. And hopefully next week we're having a good time previewing the College World Series and all of that.
Absolutely. We will break down the Knoxville region next podcast. If not, that means it's a surprise podcast and something really exciting's happened over the weekend. But yeah, we'll go ahead and prepare for breaking down the Knoxville Regional along with the rest of the NCAA tournament. Folks, thanks for joining us. We will see you again next week.